Hi, my name is John Curry, and I'm sitting here today with Steve Gordon. Steve's a good friend, but the reason we're together today is to talk about a new book he's written. The title of it is Exponential Network Strategy. Steve, tell us why you wrote this book.
Well, John, first, really grateful for you being here and doing this interview. I think this is an important topic. And for professionals who, you know, they went and spent years and years getting trained and educated and probably taking tests and getting certified or licensed to practice in their chosen discipline, they've often spent so much time focused on the practice of what they're doing. A lot of times they don't really have any training or experience in business development, and it's an area that they tend to struggle in. I know because early in my career, I was the CEO of a engineering consulting firm at the age of 28. And I got kind of thrown into the fire, didn't know how to develop new business at all at that point. And so I've been there. And I went out and did all of the things that we're all taught to do. You go out and you network in the community, and you join the Chamber of Commerce, and you get involved in charities, and you try and get on the right committees in the charity to, you know, sit next to, you know, the muckety-muck that you want to do business with, right?
I remember those days.
Yeah, so, and that's kind of been the standard way to get connected if you're a professional. And I'll be honest with you, I did that for a number of years, and it works. It'll grow your business. But I spent a tremendous amount of time running all over town, going to meetings, both early in the morning, you know, lunchtime, after hours, and spent a lot of time away from my family. And it just got to the point where it wasn't sustainable and wasn't producing the results that I want. And so as a result, I kind of, you know, discovered and invented this different way of approaching networking. And I've been doing it for close to 15 years now. We've been teaching it to our clients for the last 7 years, and it's very powerful, and it'll revolutionize the way that you network.
I think it'd be important to a little disclaimer here. I am one of your clients.
You are.
And it's helped me tremendously. So you folks are going to be learning some material that will help save you a lot of time, energy, and money, and it will improve your attitude because you're not sitting around with people that you don't want to be around. I refer to that as shaking hands and kissing babies.
Yes.
Because you're like the politician, you got to be visible all the time, and it wears you out. Who did you write this book for? Let's be more specific there. So who should be reading this book?
Well, so if you're in a leadership role in a professional service firm, whether you're in a small firm and you're, you know, one of the partners, or you're the CEO, or if you're a solo, but if you're responsible for developing new business for your firm, this book is going to help you.
Good. I agree. Totally. Let's think in terms now of some of the things that people are dealing with every day that when they read this book, that they might first blush go, well, wait a minute, this is totally different than what I was taught.
Yeah. So we find there's three big myths in networking. And the first is this idea that, you know, if I just do a really, really great job, people will talk about me, word will spread. And you hear that from a lot. In fact, we heard it from, we surveyed over 1,000 business owners when I wrote my first book, Unstoppable Referrals. And in all of those responses, the number two most cited frustration was, you know, I knock myself out. I do great work. My clients are really happy, but we never get referrals. I'm well known in the community, and I'm not getting many referrals from my network. And I'm just frustrated. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. And so there's this thought out there that that's going to be the solution. And it's just really, unfortunately, it's not the solution that you think it's going to be. And so we're going to show you a different way to approach networking so you don't have to worry about that. The second big myth in networking is the idea that I just need to get my name out there. You know, if I just get my name out there and spread it far and wide, if I'm seen at, you know, like you say, shaking hands and kissing babies, right? You know, at every networking event, like you said, just in case, really wear your aspect there. Just in case you're going to babies, right? Ink this person, who is person, who, big deal. Thank you, John. It's been
missing out, right?
Yeah. Like an event. And so you to go to more, but the problem, the old way of network hours. And so, right, to do that so that you can still get help, but you do it in a really leveraged way. Deal. And the third big myth that we found is this like of the mutually beneficial relationship to accomplish. So I don't know if you've ever had somebody and you sat down, the people a nice lunch, and at the end of it, they say, "Well, Joe, but the problem to having a beneficial relationship with you." You ever heard that way of network?
Several times, and as usually another professional, truthfully, having access to my clientele. But yet, I'm not so sure it's mutually beneficial.
Well, and that's the problem. I mean, so that you most of the time can still get, and I do it in a really thousand leveraged way. Lunch meetings, coffee dates, bread. And the third, you know, meeting people for a drink with the idea that we found I'd create one of those relationships. And I can probably do it. You want to show, you know, two hands, the number that actually of a long-term business benefit relationship. And so we're going to show you a way to approach these. So it takes less, I don't know if for you is better leveraged, and there being three align your interest down is getting new clients and growing your business. Nice lunch, and the interest at the end of it, the person that you're networking with, so that it's not quite so client glory to prior to you know, having them share you.
I look forward to learning more
with you. You ever heard that?
Steve, I'm looking here and it says chapter one, if I could only see more people. What do you mean by that title? If I could only see more people.
You know, it's funny, John, I've had hundreds of sales conversations with owners of professional service firms who are interested in working with our company. And, you know, there's this thread that runs through all of them. And people will tell me, I'm really great in front of a potential client. And I always ask them, well, how many do you close? And they always tell me 7 out of 10. I don't know why 7 out of 10 is a magic number. 7 out of 10 is it. And they'll say, I probably close 7 out of 10, but I just need to see more people. And I have heard that over and over and over again to know that it's a real problem. And really what the person who says that is describing is that they're describing a lack of demand for their services. And there are three big problems with a lack of demand. First big problem with it is when you don't have enough demand, when you don't have all the clients flowing in that you want to have, you have a lack of choices.
Big time.
Yeah, and that's bad. I mean, a lack of choices means you're going to take clients that you don't want to take. You're going to take terms that aren't good for you. You're going to agree to deadlines that are going to put you and your team in a bad place, all because you're not in a position where you can confidently say, nope, that's not a fit for us, next, because there is no next. And that's really the where that comes from. So that's the first big problem with it. The second big problem is that it puts a ceiling on the fees that can be charged. And that's a huge problem. Now, in my first firm, we were pretty fortunate. We were in high demand. We had done a lot of the things that we're talking about here, and we've done other things to create more demand than we had capacity for. And that meant every time someone new came along, we were going to charge them a fee that made us happy and that was profitable for us so that we could continue to have a sustainable business. And what I see a lot of times, because, you know, commoditization has hit professions like it has hit the product industries.
Pretty much every industry or profession is now commoditized.
Yeah, and it's relatively new for the professions. In the 80s and 90s, all the product industries got hit with it. Well, the late 90s and the 2000s, all the professions are getting hit with it. You're in financial services. There's 300,000, give or take, you know, financial advisors in the United States. Yep. You got a lot of competition.
A lot.
Right?
Plus all the stuff on the internet.
Plus all the free information.
And the talking heads who think they know everything.
And so in every industry, you've got all of this competition. And it if you don't find a way to engineer demand, part of which is creating authority positioning for yourself, which we'll talk about as we get further into the book. But if you don't find a way to engineer more demand than you can fulfill, then you're always going to have your fees capped. And that's a terrible place to be in terms of running a business. So that's the second real big problem here. The third problem is that you end up taking bad clients. And we've all been in that position where we've felt a little desperate, we felt a little thin with cash flow, and a client presented themselves that we knew wasn't a fit. But we took them anyway.
Because we needed the money.
You needed the money. Well, every time I've ever done that, and thankfully I haven't done it, you know, regularly, but I have done it. Every time I have done that, I have regretted it. It has been the worst client, the biggest, you know, pain in the backside, as they say. And it's typically been an unprofitable client. And so if you don't have enough demand, you're forced to take those clients, unfortunately.
Let's go back to something you said at the very beginning. You made a comment about seeing more people. So I'm of the opinion that I don't necessarily want to see more people. I want to see enough people, but the right people.
Same problem.
Okay, expand.
Well, I don't care what your number is. I don't care if you need to see, you know, or bring in five clients this year or 500. Okay? Let's say you want to scale back and see more of the right people. You still have to create an excess of demand.
Absolutely.
With the right people. That's the game. So, you know.
And it's more difficult because that means by nature I have to say no to some in order to attract the others, right?
Absolutely.
So if I'm going to be that picky, then I better make sure that I do understand the strategy and use it to its fullest.
Absolutely. You want that red velvet rope to create a line out front so that there's always another new potential client waiting to do business with you. Now, you've done a particularly good job of this, and I'm going to brag about you for a minute. We've been working together for, what, about 10 years now?
10 years.
And, you know, you are regularly doing both the things that we're talking about here, but you're also implementing other strategies, and you've created a situation where you have all the demand that you want. Sure, you'd probably like to have more. Maybe you'd like to, upgrade the number of, you know, the type of client, but I think
constantly
we're all
doing that.
Yeah, I think we're always doing that. Mm-hmm. But you're in a situation where you're usually booking out well in advance.
Yes.
And you're now able to charge fees, which is unusual in your industry. Most financial advisors get paid on commission of some kind or another. You're charging upfront fees just for consulting.
Correct.
How have you been able to do that?
Well, it goes back to what you just said. If you have enough demand and people see you as being the specialist, expert, authority, whatever you want to call it, in your world, it puts you in a position of where you're different. And I made a decision several years ago to charge fees, and I quit for a while, and a year and a half, 2 years ago, started again. But I'm just to the point of where I made the choice that I'm no longer willing to do the work hoping that you do business with me. So if we're sitting together, I have knowledge that will help you. If the person sees that and they want to pay a fee for the planning, then we go to work. And then when it comes time to find the right financial products, we'll go find the products. But people like that. They find it to be very refreshing because how many times you sat across the table from someone and you knew the sales pitch was coming? You knew it was coming, but everything was like, we're going to do this for you, do this, do this, do this. And you walk away saying, wait a minute, what's this going to really cost me? So we took that off the table. It's off the table. Yeah, we're going to do the planning for X amount of fee. And then if we move forward, if you want financial products, we'll get this for you.
Now, you haven't always charged the fee.
Nope.
You did, and then you stopped. And before that, you didn't for probably a couple of decades.
Well, at least, probably 5 years, yes.
I would submit that the only way you'll have the confidence in your business to be able to charge higher fees or charge different fees than what the market is doing is to create that demand. That demand gives you the confidence to be able to make those decisions.
For sure. If you create the demand, you have the ability, you said it so well earlier, if I have enough people lined up to see me, I don't have to take a client if they are a pain in the butt. If they're argumentative, don't listen, then I don't have to deal with them. And that is so empowering. So empowering. Whether it be in a webinar, whether it be live seminars or face-to-face, it gives me the choice. Not just the client the choice. I have the choice. I don't have to take everyone as a client.
It's a powerful position to be in.
Steve, let's talk about chapter 2. I found this to be intriguing. You think the answer is to get your name out there. Now, I'm a little offended by this one because all the training I ever got says, John, just be visible, get out there. So what's wrong with that?
Well, it's funny. Nothing's wrong with it on its face, okay? You do need to be known out in the world, but the problem with it is the way that we're taught to do that. We talked about it a little bit in the introduction, this notion that you know, you need to go to all these different events within the community. And there are really, you know, essentially two ways to get your name out there. One is to buy advertising, and you certainly can do that. For most professional service businesses, it doesn't work as well as you maybe would hope it would, because there's a lot of waste with it, and it's very hard to target if you have a very specific type of client that you're going after. And so most professionals turn to other ways of doing that, personal relationships and networking. And, you know, when you look at all the networking advice out there, they tell you, well, you know, networking, you know, the last part of that word is working.
Right.
You have to work. And while you do have to do some work, it can mushroom into a job of its own. And that becomes a real problem, especially if you're trying to run a business. I mean, you got clients to deal with. In professional services, we're always juggling running the business, managing the clients, and delivering results there, maintaining those relationships, and then trying to go out and grow the business on top of that. So there's these three hats that you're trying to wear all the time, and it can be really difficult to juggle that. And so I think that's the big problem with it, is that to get your name out there the way that we're all taught, it just requires you being everywhere.
I just thought of something. We talked about at breakfast one time. I want to share with the group. I remember when I no longer, quote, had to network, the things that I go to, like Rotary, Economic Club, Capital Tiger Bay, I go to those things now relaxed. I'm not worried about meeting someone. If I'm visible, I'll see someone across the room. We wave at each other. Somebody will come over. We'll shake hands. But I'm not on. I'm there, and I'm enjoying the event. And you know what? Business comes to me because I'm not on and, like, looking for somebody.
Well, and that leads, I think, to the next important point here. We've all been to those events where somebody walked up, business card in hand, shoved it in your face,
yes,
and tried to pitch you right there on why you should do business with them. And some people think that's what networking is. And I don't like being exposed to that. I'm looking for real relationships where I can meet someone, connect with them. We can, you know, we're aligned philosophically, and it's easy to share them. And, you know, the kind of the old way of doing this is, you know, the expectation is actually a really hard expectation, a hard thing to accomplish. The idea that you and I might meet at a breakfast event for the Chamber of Commerce, and you know, we might have a cup of coffee, you know, a week later after that. And then from there, the expectation is usually that I'm going to go find a referral for you. You're going to go find a referral for me. Well, I'll tell you what I used to do. I would go do that, and I'd go find a referral for that person or somebody I could connect them with. And then they'd disappear. They'd go to the witness protection program, never be heard from again.
Yes.
And so I'd run around, do all this work, and really get very little out of it. And so that's the problem with getting your name out there the way that we're all taught, is it just, the whole system's broken.
Okay, so a close relationship with that would be referral partners. I have never found that to work very well for me, quote, referral partners. So expand on that. You talk about that in your book. So what's wrong with referral partners?
Well, that whole little dance that we just talked about where, you know, you meet somebody, then maybe you have lunch or coffee, and then from there you try and turn it into a relationship where you're referring back and forth. The way we're all taught to do that is to give value first, right? But the way that we think about giving value is usually, I got to go get them a referral. I've got to go find someone who would be beneficial for this person. And that's a difficult thing to do because there's a high bar of trust there. You know, if I've not met you and we meet for the first time, John, and you tell me you're a financial advisor, and I go, okay, great. That means you handle, you know, mom's nest egg. Well, I'm not going to refer my mom to you as a potential client until I know you pretty darn well.
Absolutely.
Might take a couple of years, right?
That's right. Because I wouldn't either. I'm not going to give you access
right.
to my mother or my clientele until I know I can trust you and you're doing the right thing for my people.
And nor should you. And that's the problem in our types of businesses, is that the level of trust that's required to make that referral for the referral partner is so high that it's really, really difficult for them to do. The barrier is just too high. And so as we go through the rest of the book, we're going to get into some specific strategies that we use with our clients, that we use in our own business, and they lower that bar so that you can get introduced, but it's not that high bar of, you know, bringing somebody who's about to be a client over to them.
Very good. I'm looking forward to learning more. Steve, let's talk about chapter 3. What do you mean by an ever-expanding network of cooperation and leverage? I had to write that one down because that's a tongue twister. So what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, when we do any kind of business development, we want it to be ever-expanding, right?
Absolutely. I don't want it to be shrinking.
Right. And if we're going to build a network for ourselves to support our professional career, we want it to be a network of cooperation.
Absolutely. Don't want to be fighting.
Right. And we want it to be ideally leveraged so that we're putting in, you know, with every little bit of input we put in, we get a multiplier output.
Leverage with my time, my energy, and my talent.
Absolutely. And so that's really what we're talking about throughout this book, is giving you a way to continually expand your network without you having to run all over town like we've already, you know, talked about, some of the challenges in traditional networking.
I like it. Talk a little bit about this thing called friction that you refer to a lot.
So the old way of networking is filled with friction. We've talked about some of the ways that it comes in. The idea that you've got to bring a referral that's basically ready to buy, you know, to someone puts a really high barrier and a lot of friction in place because you're often networking with other professionals and the people you're networking with, you know, also view you as being in a high trust business where for them to bring a client to you requires a great deal of trust because of what you do. It adds friction to this whole process and makes it difficult for people to help you. And ultimately, that's what we want to be able to do. We want people to help us, and we want to be able to help them, but do it in a really easy way.
Is that what you mean by creating frictionless marketing from the standpoint of where, I don't think you ever get rid of all the friction, but you're certainly trying to reduce it, right?
Absolutely. You want to get it down to as little amount of friction as possible in an entire process. And so to do that, you actually have to think a little bit about how you're going to approach something and understand where the friction points are. And we've done that with networking. We've removed them. So it's really critical that you're able to do this. It's that single mindset that you're going to take the friction out of this. You're going to make this less difficult for people to help you that allows you to really expand your network very fast and do it in a way that doesn't require a whole lot of time on your part.
I like that because, let's face it, I can't get more time. I can buy someone else's time, but I can't get any more time myself. You talk about aligning interest. Expand on that. Why is it important that I align my interest and the potential referrer's interest? Talk about that for a minute.
Well, so, you know, if we think about a person that you network with, and you've met them, you've got a good relationship, but they've got all these interests that and priorities that are likely ahead of you. They have their own business to run.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah. They have their own business to run. They have their family. They've got all the other things that are important to them. And somewhere down there, probably not in the top 10, is you, right? And yet you're sitting there thinking, oh, I just made this relationship with this person and I can't wait until the phone rings and they tell me they've got my referral. How awesome will that be, right? You've got to look at it from their perspective. They are living an extremely busy life. And if we can align the interests that they already have, the things that are motivating them with the things that we want to accomplish, in other words, getting clients, then this whole process becomes easier because now it's in their interest to help you.
Yes.
And so what we've done in this process and what you need to think about is how can I make having them help me actually grow their business?
Or give them something else they want, which could be status or prestige, depending
Absolutely.
Upon who they are and what's important to them.
Absolutely.
I like that. So if I can find out what that person wants and then help them get more of that, then I'm going to, by definition, benefit also, aren't I?
Absolutely. And we're going to shortcut that whole process for you.
I like it. Good, good. All right, one more before we get out of this chapter. Talk a little bit about closed networks, because there are some networks that are difficult to get into. So you have an intriguing concept from the standpoint of being able to penetrate those closed networks. Give us a little teaser on that one.
Well, before we jump into that, I want to talk a little bit about the method that we use. Okay. To get all those interests aligned, because I think it's important that everybody understand what we're talking about. The method that we use with our clients and that we use ourselves to accomplish all of this is a simple interview. And the interview is really, it's a powerful, powerful way to align all of those interests. And it works almost universally, because what you're doing is you're going to another business owner and you're saying, hey, you know, I have a group of people that I market to, that I communicate with on a regular basis, my clients, my prospects, people in my network, and they'd really benefit from your knowledge, your expertise. And so I'd love to sit down and interview you where you could tell me, you know, all of the great things that you know, you could share those, and then I'll share that interview out with everyone that I know, all my contacts, all my network. And what you'll find is that another business owner is going to sit there and go, hey, wait a second. You mean this guy's going to sit down and interview me? Basically, I'm going to get to, you know, share how smart I am, how great I am. He's going to make me look good. I can tell my story. And then he's going to share it with a bunch of people who might be clients for me. And I have yet to find a business owner who says no to that. And so when we talk about aligning interests, it's looking at the world that way. How can I do something that will almost universally apply? And I can build a system out of it, and we'll go through the steps of the system as we get further into the book. But, you know, how can I design something that just by doing this, I can expand my network, I can align my interests with other people, and get their cooperation?
Makes sense. Because you're helping that person share their story. They're helping other people by telling that story. And you're benefiting also.
Sure.
And you're developing a relationship much faster than going somewhere and having coffee or, quote, networking.
Yeah, and you're developing deep relationship. And as we get into the next couple of chapters, we'll show you how you actually can take that and use it to spread the word about what you do. But you asked a question about closed groups, closed networks. So as you begin working up the affluence ladder and working with, you know, more and more affluent people, they tend to protect themselves more because there are lots of salespeople chasing all that money. Mm-hmm. And it's harder and harder to break into those networks. Most of the time, those networks operate 100% on referral. And I'll tell you, I'm in one of those networks, you know, just with my friends. And yep. If I need something, I don't go looking online and I don't go, you know, looking at advertising.
You make a phone
I
call.
Pick up a phone and I call somebody and I ask. And if you want to deal with higher end clients, you're going to have to get inside those networks. And one of the easiest ways to do that is to begin interviewing people who are in those networks. Yes. Again, their ego is your ally here, and you're going to be able to get in and build relationship with them and then have them spread that interview and in doing so, introduce you within that network.
And by definition, as you said earlier, I've now aligned my interests and your interest, so there's less friction to do that.
Absolutely.
Okay, makes total sense. Okay, let's talk about chapter 4. Steve, tell me this. How do you identify these high leverage opportunities? Because that's what they are.
Well, yeah, and they're really five different criteria that we look for, and we can go through all five. The first of these criteria is audience fit, and let me just explain what I mean by that. So everybody has an audience, you know, and you may not call it your audience, but you have an audience, and those are the people that pay attention to you in the world. Might be a big number, might be a little number, doesn't matter, you have an audience. And when you're going out looking for these opportunities, you are looking for people who are trying to reach the same audience that you are. And so You're going to be looking for businesses that are selling into the same market, that have the same prospects, that would have the same types of clients that you're looking to attract. So that's probably the first and most critical criteria.
And if I don't get that one right, I could end up doing a lot of work and being in front of the wrong person, couldn't I?
Absolutely. Yeah, no point in that. So the second is referability. So this is someone that you're going to interview. You're going to hopefully find that they have some really unique and valuable expertise that you can share with your audience, with the people that you're selling to and the people in your network. And you need to be interviewing somebody that has something to say, that is a little bit referable. You don't want to go interview somebody who has a reputational problem or anything like that. So they need to be referable. Somebody that if you knew them really, really well, you'd be willing to bring them a new client. But you're at an early stage in the relationship, and if they're of good stature in the community, generally well regarded, they're probably referable and meet that criteria.
That makes sense. I like number three here. Willingness to play. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, it's hard to play ball with somebody who doesn't show up, right? So they got to be willing to play. They got to be somebody who is doing business development. There are those, people that you come across occasionally that really, really brilliant in whatever area that they're practicing, but it's like they're a hermit, okay? And they don't want to be out in public, and that's totally fine.
Sure.
But they're not going to be a good partner for you here. So you're looking for somebody that wants to play, who looks at this as, hey, here's an opportunity for me to promote myself. And if they respond excitedly, and I'll tell you, I've done this with hundreds and hundreds of business owners, and I've never had anybody tell me no all this time. So you'll find that people are very excited about the opportunity.
Well, I want to talk about this for a minute, because I have a gentleman in town who, if on three occasions, told me no, he did not want to be interviewed. Then he got wind that I was going to interview someone else. So he chased me down.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, he saw someone else getting an opportunity, so his willingness to play changed real quickly. Mm-hmm. Real quickly.
That happens often.
I love it, too, because instead of me chasing him, he was chasing me.
That's the way you want it. Right?
Let's talk about number four, platform. So you're talking about building a big platform out here. What do you mean by platform?
Well, so depending on what industry you're in or who you're networking with, you may not find people that have a big platform. By platform, I mean they're communicating on a regular basis with their audience, with their prospects, with their clients, with the people in their network. And more and more businesses are doing that now than ever before because of the internet and the ease with which you can do it, but they're not all doing it, and that's okay. So in a perfect world, you'll find somebody that's got a platform, even if it's a small platform, even if it's 50 people. If it's the right 50 people, it's fine. But if somebody doesn't have a platform, it's going to be harder for you to make this work. You're going to have to coach them a little bit more. It's not that it won't work, but if they have a platform, if they're publishing, let's say, an email newsletter or a printed newsletter, or they've got an active social media channel where they're posting things, they're going to know what to do with the interview that you create with them.
Does it matter what their platform is, whether you mention email or printed? Does it really matter?
It really doesn't. And really, it's just more about the fact that they're doing it so that you don't have to do a whole lot of training. You don't have to tell them what to do. They're going to go, oh, yeah, this is perfect. I'll be able to email that out, in our weekly email blast.
Yep. I like it. Good. Last one, authority.
This is the biggie.
It is a biggie.
Okay. So if you're going to sell effectively in professional services, you need to have authority. We talked about commoditization earlier, and all of the service businesses now are just feeling the crunch of commoditization. It's driving fees lower. We're seeing some professions that used to be, really profitable and well-regarded. Some of those projects are going overseas or are going to freelancers where that just wasn't a possibility before. So if you're going to be able to grow consistently and do it profitably, you need to be able to charge higher fees. And you need to be able to position yourself to get the premium clients in your market. The way that you do that is with authority. And if you don't have authority now, the best way to go get it is to associate yourself with other people who have authority.
Yes.
You're masterful at doing this, John. You will go and interview people who are recognized in your market as being the leaders or the authorities in the market in different parts of the market, and you'll interview them. And every time that you do, a little bit of that authority rubs off.
Absolutely.
And you've done it with folks directly in your market. You've done it with big celebrities like George Foreman and others.
Yes,
and,
fun too.
Yeah, and
you learn a lot.
And every time that you're able to do that, you elevate your stature in the mind of your market just because you're seen as associating with someone who they already recognize.
And you know what's interesting about that too? If you do it with the correct intention,
yes,
that it's not manipulation, you're there, you're learning, you're helping them, you're helping yourself. It's like sitting here doing this interview with you, you're reminding me of things that I read when you gave me the ability to read the manuscript, but now it's digging deeper to how to apply it. And I'd be willing to bet you money that as you're listening to this and watching this, you're doing the same thing, folks.
Well, and John, this is probably a good time to talk about a concept that you taught me called purity of intent. And with everything that we're talking about here, the assumption is that you're going to approach this with what we call purity of intent, which means your intent is pure. It is sincere. When you go out and do an interview with someone, it's because you truly want a relationship with them. It's not manipulative in any way. You're just using this interview as a really effective tool to start that relationship. And so in anything that you do, if you're going to be associated with us and with our company, we want you to be using purity of intent. We know that most people do, but I think it's important for everybody to understand that if you don't come from that kind of a place with this, people will detect your insincerity and it won't work very well.
Agreed. Thank you for sharing. That's powerful stuff. Steve, chapter 5 you titled Easier Than You Think. Let's be honest. This whole concept is foreign to most people who first hear it because they've been taught to do the networking we talked about earlier. So expand on that. What do you mean by it's easier than you think?
Well, we didn't invent the interview. I think Johnny Carson did back in the Stone Age. But it was certainly foreign to me when I started doing this. I started doing this really back in the early 2000s before the internet was around, but it was before, all of the technology that we have today is really common, like podcasts and things like that. And it was totally foreign to me. I didn't know how to do it. We didn't know what technology to use, how to record them, and didn't know how to actually sit and do the interviews. So it was a little bit intimidating, to be quite honest, to look at this as a strategy for networking. But it is easier than you think. And I'd love to talk through some of the things that people commonly like get scared about.
Well, my first question in my head was how many people do I need to interview? And how do I get started?
Well, the better question is, how fast do you want to grow your network? Okay, so you can do this and do it really, really effectively with one person a month. And it'll take you less than an hour a month to do, and you'll grow your network faster than you're doing it right now, and you'll be able to go pretty much cold turkey on other networking if you want to.
See, I've done this concept and I interview people. Where I get hung up is I don't do it as much as you do it. I don't do enough of it. So what would you say to that?
Well, we do one interview a week. We interview 52 entrepreneurs a year. And we interview them all very strategically. These are people that I want to have a connection with, whether it's somebody that I think will be a good referral relationship, or I want access to the people that they know. And again, I approach it with purity of intent. These are people I truly do sincerely want to know. But I think it's possible to combine purity of intent and business strategy at the same time. So the more people that you interview and the more frequently that you publish these interviews, the faster you're going to grow. And you can take that all the way up to doing one a day. There are people today who are doing them daily.
And obviously, the more you do it, the better you get at it, too.
Absolutely, yeah. It's much easier than you think in actually conducting the interviews.
All right, so I line up the people that I want to interview. I have the period of intent. I'm getting information out there to help my clientele as well as theirs. So how do I distribute this now?
Well, I tell you, it's easier now than it's ever been. So when we first started doing these back in the early 2000s, we would actually use a phone bridge line where you'd call in and there'd be an operator there and the other person would call in and the operator would say, hi, my name is, you know, Mary Lou and, you know, and I'm your operator today and whenever you're ready, just tell me and I'll start recording and they'd record it and then you'd be able to, you know, access that recording, which we would then take and put on CDs.
Yes.
And take down to the post office and put stamps on them and mail them out. And it was incredibly effective at accomplishing all of the goals that we were talking about here, but it was a whole lot of work because the technology really hadn't evolved. Now it's so easy to do. You can record these with things like Skype and Zoom and other you know meeting software, and save the file down, email the file, email a link to it. You can create a podcast where people get it automatically. All kinds of ways to do it. What we always recommend is start as simple as you can if you're going to do it yourself or get help. And that's one of the things that, you know, I know you know we do for clients and we take care of all the technology. So all you have to do is show up and actually conduct the interview, which is, as a business owner, what you should be doing.
Absolutely. Just show up. I save time and energy.
Absolutely.
And probably a lot of money because I'd probably mess it up myself. Steve, let's talk about chapter six now. I like this. It's the interview blueprint. Here, I think you're about to give us some hardcore direction on what to do and how to make this happen. But I got to ask this question. Are these interviews difficult to do?
No, they're really not difficult to do. But you need a framework. If you try and show up to every interview and you don't sort of have any structure to it, it will be difficult for you. And so in the book and what we'll walk you through now are the parts of the framework. And really the first and most important thing that you want to get set is the angle of the interview. And by the angle, we mean like what direction are you going to take? Kind of how are you going to approach interviewing this particular person? And what I've found is that there are really just three angles that you'll ever use in business interviews. And the first is what I call the success angle. And the success angle is really just sitting down with someone, and this is the way we do our Unstoppable CEO podcast. The first half of every interview is a success angle. We sit down with the guest and we ask them, what is it that's made you successful? And have them describe that. Now, that's a great way to interview someone for one very important reason. It edifies them. It says, you know, hello, you know, Mr. Networking Partner, you're successful. You've done something that most people haven't done. And I want to share the way that you were able to accomplish this with them. And sharing your story is important. That edifies them. That helps you build relationship as you do it, and it's also really great content. We get more feedback on that type of content in an interview than we do anything else. So that's the first one.
So that's like a how-to approach.
Not so much how-to, more what are the things that you know you've done in your life? What's your story? How'd you get to this point in your career? And what are the key things that made you successful? So the second one is more the how-to approach. It's called the expert angle. And the expert angle is really where you're interviewing this person who is an expert at whatever they do, you know, whatever area of practice that they're in, and you're asking them to help share their expertise. And that might be in the form of, you know, describing how to accomplish something for, you know, the people that they help. And so that's the second really powerful one. And you can use any of these, you can use them interchangeably. One interview can be success angle, and then the next one can be an expert angle. Really just depends on what you feel like will highlight the guest the best. That's the whole goal here, is you want to make them look good. You want to shine a really bright light on this person that you're interviewing them. Make them the star. So we talked about there being three. So the third one is what I call the client glory angle. And the client glory angle is where you interview one of your clients and you highlight the wonderful success that they have had as a result of working with you. And you want to tell their story, you know, where they started and what challenge they were facing and all of the things that went into them deciding to find a solution for it and now what life is like after you've been able to solve that problem for them. So those are really the three angles that you want to work with. Two of them work with people that are just in your network that you're trying to connect with. The third, as well as the other two, work with your clients.
Absolutely.
Which allows them to tell their story.
Absolutely.
And I'm thinking of a retired professor, what started out being a 15-minute interview was 45 minutes of him telling stories I'd never heard that were fantastic.
Absolutely.
That everyone who's listened to it loves it. They
Absolutely.
Love it. They love it. So walk us through how you'd recommend conducting the interview.
Well, there are really four parts that you can break this down into. And what I would recommend is that as the business owner, you focus on conducting the interviews. This is all about you building relationship with another business person. And the danger that you can get into, because there's a lot of technology related to this process, is you can get down in the weeds and get into the technology. Don't do that. Get somebody on your team to do it or get somebody to help you. And if you want the help, we certainly can help you in our agency. But there are four parts that you want to think about as you sit down to do the interview. You want to start with an opening and introduce your guest. And then once you've done that, then you'll move into kind of the heart of the interview. And so if you're going to take the success angle, that's where you're going to ask them a few questions just to get them talking about, you know, how they became so successful. And, you know, most people think that this is the difficult part. How do I come up with the questions? And what I found is that if all you'll do is get on the call about 5 minutes ahead of time before you start recording and have a little conversation with the other person, put them at ease a little bit, and just kind of talk through together what you both think would be interesting and almost form a little bit of an outline, then this is a really easy process. Really, this is more of a conversation than an interview. You don't have to be Barbara Walters.
Okay. How do I go about promoting my guests without it coming across as too salesy or too pushy?
Well, one of the powers of this is that you are going to be promoting the guest and they're not going to be promoting themselves. And you're going to be able to share some resources that they have. So if they've got a website where they have really great information, then as you get to the end of the interview, you want to direct people there and help that guest, you know, take people to that next step. And like in your case, John, if I were to interview you, you have a book for people who are thinking about retirement, you have an information kit, you have all these resources for people. Well, it's very easy for me to say, and say it very authentically at the end of the interview, look, you've heard a lot from John, and he's got a ton of resources that will take you even deeper than what we've already talked about here. And here's how you go get them. And he's happy to send them to anybody who's listening to this. So that's how you do that. And then the last part, this is the part that people leave out. And this is really important. Okay, you're doing this interview so that you can grow your network, so that you can grow your business. At the end of it, you need to have a next step offer that promotes you. And oftentimes what we will do when working with our clients so that they don't have to read it, we'll script it out and we'll have a voiceover artist to read that so that at the end of the interview, it's just sort of plugged in right at the end. Sounds very natural. And usually that will direct them to the website or how to get a free consultation or download a white paper or something like that.
So if I'm interviewing you and we're focusing on your expertise, the voiceover would be promoting my information.
Yes.
So they can get my information kit. But I'm promoting you, and then the voiceover is, oh, by the way, if you want more.
Sure. It's like your commercial at the end of the show.
Okay. I like that. Okay. Now, I'm fascinated by this one. You refer to something you call the network multiplication question.
Yeah. So this is really important. Like, the whole idea here is to grow your network, right?
Yes.
So at the end of this, at the end of every interview, you want to ask the network multiplication question. And the question is very simply, hey, John, This has been a lot of fun, and I've gotten such great feedback on all these interviews that we're doing, and I know you know everybody in the community. Can you think of two people that would be a really good fit for me sitting down and interviewing them like this? And invariably, they will think of five.
And, very good.
And in fact, some people, I've had some that just keep sending me names for months. Hey, what about this person? What about that person? And here's the thing. What those people have learned is that when they send someone to you to be interviewed and you interview them, they get a little bump in social capital.
Yes.
Because now they've turned someone on to a business building opportunity, these interviews that you're doing. It actually will take on a life of its own.
Makes total sense. I love it. Okay, Steve, chapter 7. Turning interviews into referral opportunities. I love that title, but tell me how to do it.
Well, the point here, right, is we want to grow our business. And we're creating the environment for establishing new relationships very, very easily. And we've talked already about doing that. But at some point, we got to turn this into real business opportunity or we're all going to starve to death. So there are several ways that you can do that. But these interviews really form, I think, the foundation for going deeper with people.
Okay. I get that and I can see why. Because if I have a relationship with you and I'm telling your story for you, there's going to be an opportunity, if I know how to act on it, to get introduced to your network of people. So how do I do that?
Well, first, it's important to understand you're going to build real relationships here. You're going to sit down and interview someone and you're going to bond with them. Okay, you're going to have a really great conversation and you're helping them in this process. And at the end of it, you're going to have somebody who is really grateful for having known you and having been a part of this process. The other thing that you have to understand about this is you're going to show up in a completely unique way, unlike anyone that they have ever networked with before. And that's important because you're now memorable. You're the guy, you're not going to be the guy they met at the mixer, you know, for the charity 6 months ago that they can't remember your name. You're the guy or the gal that interviewed them.
Right.
They're never going to forget that. It may be the only time they ever get interviewed like that in their lives. They're going to remember you. And you have to understand, because this is such a unique approach, you're building very strong relationships in a very short, compressed period of time.
Which is important. Goes back to that leverage again.
Well, it sets up the next step.
You like to talk about turn the tables. Expand on that.
Yeah, so there's two ways to really take these interviews and turn them into business opportunities. The first is what I call turn the tables. And turn the tables is saying to that person you've just interviewed, you know, usually I don't like to do it right at the end of the interview. I usually like to wait, get some feedback, because invariably you will send these out to everyone you know, and somebody will send you a note back, send you an email, send you a text and say, "Well, that was a great interview with John. That was fantastic. Thanks for sharing that with me." So the minute that I get some good feedback, I go back to the person that I interviewed and say, "Hey, you know what? Thanks so much for doing that interview, because I just got some really great feedback about it. People are loving it. And, you know, John, I'd like to do something for you. I have some expertise that I think would help people that you know, and I'd love to sit down and have you interview me, and we could share it with all the people that you know." And you've just turned the tables. Right. And you've done it in a really authentic way, from a place of giving, where you're trying to give value to the people that this person knows. You're going to help their network. And usually it's a very, very easy thing to do, particularly since you've now trained them to understand how it all works. If you try and do that without having interviewed them first, it'll almost never work because they can't wrap their heads around all the moving parts.
Well, plus you don't have the relationship yet.
Right.
But because you've spent 30 or 40 minutes interviewing them, or 20 minutes, whatever, now you have a closer bond with them, so they're going to be more comfortable doing that.
Yeah. And these things are fun to do. I mean, they're fun to do. I end up with the people that I interview, I end up laughing and really getting to know them. And so they'll be excited about the opportunity to sit down and do that again.
Makes sense. Okay, and then you also mentioned in the book sponsored sales presentations.
Yeah, so that's the second way to turn these into business opportunities. Now, some of the people that you interview are going to be open to hosting a sales presentation for you. And by that, I don't mean you showing up with, you know, a flip chart and, you know, and some cash registers or something. But if you have an educational talk that you give that helps people understand some really serious challenges around what it is that you do for people, what you solve, then you're going to be able to go to some of the people that you interview and say, you know, I've got this presentation and it's on this topic. I know you deal with a lot of the people who are affected by this, and I'd really love to talk about maybe putting together a joint seminar and or a workshop or a webinar, and let's share this topic with them, you know, more in depth than what we could do in a 20-minute interview. Let's go for 60 minutes or 90 minutes and really help some people. And that can be an incredibly powerful way to get clients, but you can't get there with that person until you've developed the relationship first.
I like it. And it gives you the ability, the tools to do everything that you talked about earlier, but now turn it around to where business is possible. Because you said it a moment ago, you can spend a lot of time and energy, and the word you use is starve. So I like it. So this is where you actually turn the work that you've done into potential business opportunities.
Absolutely. And I think it's important for everybody to understand that, you know, we all want to jump to the let's do the sales presentation together part, right? That's where we make the money. But if you haven't established the relationship first, it's going to be really difficult for you to do that with anybody.
It's like going to a Broadway show and all they do is show the last scene.
Right.
It doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work at all.
Nobody's going to pay for that.
No.
All right, Steve, thanks. Steve, let's talk about Chapter 8. Getting meetings with prospects. How do we go about getting these interviews?
So this is kind of an advanced version of this whole strategy. You know, we've talked about how to use it with your network, but the same strategy of using these interviews as a very easy way to start a relationship with someone also works with the people that you want to do business with. And so if you know who your prospects are, and there are business owners that or others that you're trying to get in front of to do business, there's two ways to do it. There's the hard way, where you're trying to storm the front gate and get past the gatekeeper and show up as a salesperson or a vendor, and you never want to do that. Or you can go in giving value first, trying to build relationship first, and the interviews work really, really well to do this. And we've had clients do this extremely effectively. And it's just a great way to get in. I mean, people are flattered when they're asked to be interviewed because that it's just not a common thing. And we hold people who are interviewed in high esteem on TV. So they're going to see this as being similar to that.
I like that approach. I can also see where if I've interviewed you and somebody in your social network knows that, of where they're going to be asking you for an introduction to me to convince me to interview them. Mm-hmm. I can see that. I like that. I had not thought about that before. All right. So let's talk about, you use the phrase success journalist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I like to interview people. Sometimes I feel like Larry King, I'm sitting across the table interviewing someone. Is that what you mean by success journalist?
Yeah. So if you're trying to penetrate a particular industry, let's say you've got we've got one client up in the Midwest who has a niche in the plastics industry. And, you know, for him to apply this strategy, really, he would go to all of the CEOs of the small or medium-sized plastics manufacturers within, let's say, a five-state area, if that's his territory, okay? And basically say, look, I've been around the industry for a while. I know you're very successful, Mr. CEO, and I'd love to interview you about it. I'm going to start publishing a regular series of articles about what has made the different CEOs in this industry successful. And you go around and you do the success angle like we talked about and do that with each of these prospects. And they're most of the time going to jump at the chance because now they get to tell their story, particularly if they're, you know, in their 40s, 50s, 60s in terms of their age. They're usually thinking about legacy. They're a bit more philosophical at that point often and ready to share. And you're going to give them a great venue to share their story. And I think that's important in and of itself, but it's also a really excellent way to begin to build a relationship with them. What will happen is, word will get around, as you alluded to, word will get around in the industry that you're out interviewing CEOs. And pretty soon, people will start coming to you saying, hey, you interviewed so-and-so and so-and-so. I'd love to be part of that.
Pick me.
Yeah. And so now you've got prospects chasing you. And so it can be extremely powerful. The way that people used to do this, I have a client who did this back in the late 90s. And she did it to write a book. She interviewed 100 CEOs in her niche industry and compiled all that into a book. Well, thankfully now, with technology, we don't have to write a book to make this work. People understand podcasts. They understand digital media, that it's out there. And so you can do this without having to go through all that extra work.
Okay, I can just visualize someone watching this and say, okay, where do I start? To me, it sounds like you've got to start by identifying people you already know that are interesting, that have a story or they're successful, going back to your angles, and someone that's willing to play and willing to share that information.
Yes.
So give me some tips. Give us some tips on how to start working on that list. Any particular area? Would it be by what they do for a living? Help us out.
Well, again, you want to start with people who are working the same market you're working, so that when they distribute their interview, because that's really one of the side benefits here, you're going to distribute to everybody you know, but you're also going to go to them and say, hey, this would be really great if you, you know, you should share this with all of your prospects, because it's, again, highlighting them.
It's all about them. It's not about you,
right.
So there's no reason not to do it.
You're just kind of a ride along in this whole process, and that allows you to find people who can spread you to the right potential clients for you. And so you don't have to start with a big list. We recommend to our clients you start with 20. And we've actually got a tool that you can download as part of the book that should be somewhere below this video where you can download it and actually start building your list. That's the first and most important thing to do. Then, you know, if you're going to conduct these things yourself, there is a whole slew of technology that you're going to want to, you know, get plugged into. You're going to need, some recording equipment and some editing equipment or somebody that can edit. And then, of course, the technology to distribute it, whether that's through email or a podcast or online video or whatever. And so you'll need to pull all of that together. That can get a little bit complicated. And you can either have somebody on your team do that, you can outsource it. Certainly you can contact us and the folks in our agency can help you do that as well and take care of all the technical details for you. But that's the next thing to kind of wrap your head around is, what are the mechanics of this? How am I going to do it? And of course, our recommendation is always get it off your plate and focus on building these relationships.
Yep. Do what you're good at doing. All right, Steve, we've covered a lot of material here in these 8 chapters. Summarize for us. Break it down. Just kind of give us a quick little summary of what this book's all about.
Well, so we started talking about all the challenges with networking and all the different ways that networking is broken. Most probably impactful of those is the time that it takes. John, early in my career, I met a guy that he was a salesman, professional salesman for one of the vendors in our industry. And every time I would go to a networking event, he was there. He was the only one that was at everything. And he was following all the old advice and he was successful. But he was in his 60s at the time, probably mid 60s at the time. I was in my 30s. After a while I started realizing, wait a second, that's me in 30 years. If I keep doing what I'm doing and spending all of this time away from my family, away from my business, not focused on my clients, doing the kind of networking and putting in the kind of time and energy that it takes to be successful at that I was going to turn into this guy. And I looked at him, and I'm like, that's the hamster wheel of death. You just go and go and go until you fall over and die, and they take you away. And if you stop going in that old system, it quits working. It's just not sustainable, and it's not scalable, because you only have 24 hours in a day and, you know, 144 hours in a week. So,
and only one of you.
Yeah. So, you know, you've got to find a way to leverage your time and leverage your effort and your energy. And that's really what this strategy is all about. We do it based on using interviews, simple little interviews where you sit down and interview someone either about their success or about their expertise, or if they're a client, about the success they've had as a result of working with you. And then you distribute those interviews to everybody that you know, and you have them distribute it to everyone that they know. And then once you've done that and you've built a real relationship with that person, now you have the foundation to take a next step and really turn that into a situation where you're developing new business, whether that's through having them interview you or having them host a presentation where you're presenting your expertise in a seminar or a webinar or something like that to that person's prospects and clients. And so from a high level, that's really this process. And I will tell you, it will transform the way that you network. If you're going around right now and running around to event after event after event, or you're feeling guilty because you're not doing that and everybody tells you you should, this will give you a way to completely change the way that you grow your business. I know it did for me when I first started applying this. I went cold turkey on networking completely. Haven't been to a local networking event in 5-7 years now. And
I remember when you did it.
Yeah, and used to do it all the time. And so I've been there, I understand. But once I not only discovered, but really then started applying and systematizing everything that we've talked about here, the game totally changed. My business has grown dramatically. We've now implemented it with clients. Their businesses are growing as a result. And it's a powerful tool.
I've benefited from it. I still go to some networking events, but it's because I want to be there, not
Absolutely.
Because I'm there looking for business.
Absolutely. And those are the only ones I go to now. They're not necessarily here local. I go to a few around the country, but only because I want to be there and I want to be around those people.
That's good. Steve, thank you for the opportunity to interview you for this. Powerful stuff.
Thank you, John. It's been fun.